good to have you here. It's Eric solo, recording a little bit after 5 o'clock on Tuesday the 26th. The show on Q105 will happen later on this evening, each and every weeknight. Let me get rid of this Muse intro music so Spotify doesn't kick us off after only being on for a day. You know, you can find this podcast pretty much wherever you get your podcast, the iTunes podcast app, if you're an Android user, the Podbean app. And now on Spotify, if you use that. And of course, the website, Q1055.com. And then one more spot, ericchase.podbean.com. We'll do the show on Q105 a little bit later on this evening. Every weeknight from 7 to midnight, you, myself, and maybe some guests here and there. And of course, I've mentioned it a couple of times, that show will be music intensive, like when you hear me on the weekends. This is where all the long form stuff will be. Got it? Perfect. It's fun. No commercials, lots of talking here. Everybody's getting into this whole cool podcast thing, and here you are. Thank you for being here. I backed off my Cymbalta again for like the second time in a month. I did it previously because I went to go see my doctor for my stomach thing, and I was like, hey, by the way, my sex drive is completely and utterly shot. Can I dip my medication back? I did ask him, I was like, is it because I'm getting old? He's like, it's probably your medication. So if you want to do like 40 milligrams to 20 of Cymbalta, give it a go. You're savvy enough to be aware of your mental state and emotional state. I had a bit of a tailspin, so I'm like, screw that, back up to 40. But I read an article on a website, and I apologize for not being the best monologuer or monologuist. I hope you find when I sit here by myself and talk to myself until you listen, and then it's you and I having a conversation. I hope you find this compelling, and I hope you do stick out most of this podcast or however long these wind up being. I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago, and I had been looking for a new book to read, and this article was the catalyst for me finding this book. The article was on Vox.com, a site I go to often. I like to think they cut through a lot of the bullshit and give me the facts that I need. Johann Hari, I believe I'm pronouncing this correctly. I think this was his second book. This was a promo piece he wrote on the website for Lost Connections. And I came across this article, which they had republished a couple of weeks ago. It was initially, I believe, put out in February. The title of the article, and it's on my Facebook, I think, "We Need New Ways of Treating Depression. Experts are now looking to social and environmental causes of the disorder affecting millions." And I don't want to bore you with a lot of this, and I will give you some of what he shared in the book momentarily. But let me see if I can find. I scrolled up to get the title, and I got away from where I was. There were many parts of this that I was like, wow, I really need to investigate this book. And what I do is I go get the sample on iBooks, and then I try to get a gauge of, should I buy the whole thing or not? In this case, I did. And I'm looking for this one statistic. Hold on, I'm going to pause the podcast. And we're back, and you didn't even know that I had paused to go find that stat I was looking for in the article. And there's a lot here that really grabbed me, and I shared it right away, and I shared it on social and with some good friends of mine, my little psychology clique. Blah, blah, blah. Although antidepressant prescriptions have increased 500% since the 1980s, there has been no discernible decrease in society-wide depression rates. There's clearly something very significant missing from the picture we have been offered. So more antidepressant prescriptions, but not necessarily getting rid of the depressive plague and the mental health plague that we're encountering. So Johann Hari looks to the social causes. If the medications can't fix us, how deadly, I don't think that's overstating it, how deadly, how harrowing have the social causes been in our life? And this is something that's affected me. Dr. Andrea is a big believer. You've heard her on the podcast before, that it's a lot of what's going on with our mental and emotional health, psychological well-being, is environmental. And look, I'm not the scholar like she is. I did my TED talk based on my experiences, talking with a lot of therapists that I visit with, and gathering any knowledge that I can throughout the year so that I can arm myself to be in the best emotional and psychological state that I can be. So I have long believed that it's both. You're kind of born with this stuff, and then the environment has a major impact on your mental health well-being. So I decided to come back down on the Cymbalta again to 20 milligrams. Again, one primary reason and one reason feeding into that. The primary reason is reading the first handful of chapters in this book. And I wanted to get my thoughts on this book, on the podcast, since almost the first chapter that I've read it. It has flipped my belief system upside down. And look, there is a lot of, I believe, hard science in here, but I'm also cynical and cognizant that there's an agenda here as well. Everybody has an agenda. And it's up to me, the consumer, the listener, the viewer, to determine whether that agenda is benevolent or malicious. I've deeply connected with this book, so I decided to once again experiment with my Cymbalta and bring it down to 20 milligrams because I would like for the sake of my relationship, to get my libido back ramped up. Maybe not where I was when I was like 15, but the way that I used to feel. I have one very graphic example that I, like, it was a sexual aha moment that happened recently that I'm not going to share. It's very intimate. I'll save it for another time. Maybe Demetrius can pull it out of me. No pun intended. Stop it. But I was like, yep. This is definitely different. So I thought I owed it to my relationship to once again do this. And now that I've got some chapters of this book underneath my belt, maybe I've got a little bit more in my arsenal if I were to like dip into another tailspin to get out of it. Because this book, the upshot of it is, it's not so much about, it throws out the idea of chemical imbalance and serotonin levels and dopamine. And it says, science says, we can't really test that stuff as much as we can. Look, read the book. I haven't highlighted specific parts of that, but it throws out a lot of the genetic part of this. Later on in one of the chapters, it talks about a specific gene like H something. And then in the case where it is partly genetic, where similar to hair color, eye color, height. But you get those things through heredity and you get, questionable genes from your parents and family members as well. And I guess I have this from my dad. But this book says, the author Johan Hari says, this gene is more susceptible to things like anxiety and depression, but it takes the environment to activate it. Does that make sense? I'll make a real clumsy analogy here. It would be like if you had the tall gene in you, like if your parents were like 6'5" and your mom was like 5'11" or vice versa, and you just quite hadn't blossomed yet, but when somebody threw you a basketball and said, hey, take some jump shots, all of a sudden you boomed up to like 6'7". I guess they say the same thing can happen with this gene that has us predisposed or could have us more susceptible to mental health issues. The environment activates it. And I can speak greatly about environment over the last couple of years. And while this book, let me give you this. This is one of the stark takeaways from this, in Lost Connections, that really had me going, I've always been skeptical of the motives of pharmaceutical companies. I don't know if it's all for our deep well-being as much as it is. It's a great business to make a lot of money. And I don't want to be so cynical as to think that the cost of healthcare and medications, a lot of it goes back into life-saving research and development. It is paid forward in many ways, but there are some big-time profits in that business. And I read this and I was like, holy shit. My eyes were opened even wider to move forward and think, I know I need medication, and I'll get to that, but why I was okay experimenting once again, backing off and taking that mental health risk. And this is about the pharmaceutical companies. The rules they have written are designed to make it extraordinarily easy to get a drug approved. All you have to do is produce two trials, anytime, anywhere in the world, that suggest some positive effect of the drug. If there are two and there is some effect, that's enough. So you could have a situation in which there are 1,000 scientific trials and 998 find the drug doesn't work at all and two find there's a tiny effect. And that means the drug will be making its way into your local pharmacy. 1,000 trials, 99.8% of them produce nothing. But that other small percentage produces something, it can make it to the market. Now, look, I'm by no means an expert when it comes to the details of that stuff. I would hope that this isn't a straight out lie, and I'm already cynical of pharmaceutical companies. So I'm going to give this the benefit of the doubt and believe it. And remember, this book also talks about, in this chapter, in fact, that a lot of these drug trials, you know, you've ever seen anything like, hey, we're looking for people that might have signs of depression. It talks about how those people are often more likely to give the research trials the answers they're looking for. So maybe they're lying. Maybe they're not the best sample. Also, who pays? Follow the money and you'll get the answers. Who pays for these trials? Oftentimes, I would say the drug companies. Where does a lot of drug company money go? To the government. And I'm not trying to be super cynical and make this and not politicize this in any way. But reading this chapter opened my eyes to the rest of this. And it talks about how, you know, there is not as great effect as you would think or hope with a lot of these medications. And maybe it's a placebo effect. And even as I read through this book, I still believe if it works. If it's a sugar pill and you don't know it, but it's making you better, the placebo effect is real. I've also spoken about how if you have to do something that's maybe a little kooky, like maybe you have to do headstands and play video games to feel better, as long as you're not swapping one corrosive vice for another, if it makes you feel better, do it. I'm not going to laugh at you. If you have to put peanut butter on your earlobes and lay down that way and that makes you feel better, it's a little weird. But if it gets you out of that mental rut that you're in, I'm all for it. Don't swap one vice for another. If something helps you, do it. Embrace it. This book and some of this chapter from, again, Johann Hari, Lost Connections, also talks about a lot of the drugs have more side effects than the help they actually give you. I obviously have that side effect from a diminished libido from my Cymbalta, which I did not have on Wellbutrin. And I'm going to tie this all together shortly with some of my experiences and why I still, listen closely, I still have great belief that medications do work. Mine does. And it has nothing to do with a placebo effect. I'll get to that. But again, the upshot of the book is let's look at the social factors of what go into your life. My real severe depression, I was always a little, I don't know. I talked about how I got this bipolar diagnosis like 2004, 2005. But the depression really kicked in when work was hard for me to process, around 2007 or so. It was a difficult time at work. I was driving an hour each way, each day for a job that I didn't really love. That's when I began to get these bizarre soft tissue strains, ligament issues. And every time I would get it checked out, and they'd be in different parts of my body, sometimes in my knees, my patella, my elbow, just in my back, all these weird soft tissue injuries, I'd go to the orthopedist and they'd say, inflammation. And nothing more than that. All kinds of x-rays, all kinds of MRIs. Nothing was torn, nothing was ripped. There was no like physical trauma. There was no accident playing sports or at the gym. Just inflammation, which, you know, the orthopedist would say, maybe overuse, try some rehab exercises, take some Aleve, put some ice on it. So let me jump ahead here. 2017, last summer, a year ago, and I was still on and off combating these soft tissue strains, and they were a major cause of my depression. So work was hard to process, and then not having that outlet, go to the gym, work out, push my body physically to sweat out, to work out that depression and the anxiety. It was getting like punched. It was getting double teamed, getting punched in the face and kicked in the stomach. I couldn't win. And it was extremely depressing. Taking away the two things in my life that were good ways for me to feel better. Because I love what I do. I have a passion for what I do. Also, wanting to be physical and active. These two things I couldn't do real well. I had a lot of autonomy taken away at work, but there were still good parts, but a lot of my autonomy was gone, and I couldn't work out as hard as I wanted to. Two things that I adore, I couldn't do. Where was my outlet? So the depression and the anxiety and all this stuff grew and grew. And I was on the Wellbutrin from 2012 to 2015. And I'll come back to the Cymbalta in just a second. But last year, when I stopped working, and obviously I know that I'm working again, not to the degree that I was before, but it is impossible to have a stress-free work environment. You just have to be able to manage it as best as you can. And I remember asking my therapist last summer, was my stress management not good enough? Was it not up to par? Were my coping skills too weak? And he said, no, almost anybody would have crumbled underneath this workload. And I push myself hard. And when I push myself hard, and then you get the push from your supervisors and beyond, it's a lot of strain. So magically, when I didn't have that stress, whether it be for myself or my workplace, these ligament things went away. And from like July of last year all the way up until about March or April of this year, when I kind of had a couple of tweaks, I missed a step going downstairs. And that wasn't stress-induced. That was just an accident. And I just needed to have some patience. And I actually did some running today. First time in a couple of months, I did some running like I was back then. But from like June, July of last year up until that injury, I was running like I had never been in years. Now, I wasn't ready to do even like a 5K, but I got that burst of adrenaline and I got exactly what I was looking for after I would do these sprint sessions. What I would do is I would, do a warm up and then essentially run for a minute or 90 seconds and then take like a 30 or 60 second break. And then with each interval, I would go up or I'd go a little faster. And before you know it, I was, doing sprints at like 7.5, 8 miles an hour. And I couldn't believe it. 2 or 3 years ago, when I would go to run, I would either be terrified that I was going to tear muscles or rip up knees, and that was in the act, or afterwards, I would be in so much agony, I questioned why I did that. And here I was running, over the course of these intervals, 2.5, 3 miles, at least 2 days a week. And it's interesting that I talk about this now, where I just did about a mile and a half, a good start back up, after letting these injuries heal naturally, which in the past, they didn't. I've always been mind-body connection, but that stress that I was putting on myself to be the best I possibly could, the stress from where I worked and what was asked of me, was literally frying my tendons. And it was hard to get a doctor to recognize that. Even a very good friend of mine wasn't quite sure on that one. And that was just like a self-diagnosis. We were treating the symptoms. No one could discover the underlying physiological cause, the stress. So let me bring this back to why I still believe in medication. And you can put peanut butter on your ears if you want as well. So I was on the Wellbutrin, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and he knew about all these injuries. He was trying to treat them for me. And he said, look, why don't you try Cymbalta? It's another, an antidepressant? Just like Wellbutrin. And there are some, there's some data. There's some research that says this works for people with rheumatoid arthritis. It helps them with their physical pain. It's like a positive side effect of Cymbalta. I was like, absolutely. What do I have to lose? I tried it. It didn't really help with that at all. Maybe it did in a small placebo effect type way, but it certainly didn't cure it. I certainly wasn't running and challenging myself physically in 2015 and 2016 when I was on the Cymbalta, as I did over the last year where I was very stress-free or had very limited stress. But here's why I will refute a good portion of the Johann Hari book, Lost Connections. Look, much of it is great, and I will be more cognizant of where I am, what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. And I will take great account into socially what's going on around me in my environment and what can I do to change this. And I think a lot of it is common sense. If you're super stressed at work, if you're overwhelmed with emails and if they just don't stop, the book talks about there's no more 9 to 5. Yeah, it's nice that maybe your work pays for your cell phone bill and maybe it's nice to have that flexibility to get out of the office a little bit often, a little bit earlier and, you know, telecommute, but you're always on that tether and you're always a fraction of a second away from another email coming across that you need to have something done a half an hour ago or first thing in the morning. And a lot of this is the workplace environment. It is really competitive. And I get that some people are willing to be that competitive and will put aside their social lives and allow those social lives and their private time to be invaded by their employer and to be on that tether at all times, but other people won't. And it can really affect your life, as I think, you know, I just described with that those pains and strains that I had. So I'm on this Cymbalta now, thinking it'll work, you know, on my depression, like the Wellbutrin did, and maybe it'll help with these strains and this ligament inflammation that I have. You know what it really took away? Because I told you it didn't take away the pains. It took away the anxiety that I had no idea I had an issue with. And I think you've heard me talk about before that I was a hypochondriac. There have been way too many times where I have gone to the emergency room. I have tried to make, and this is before urgent care facilities were on every block. I have waited from 7 o'clock at night till the first thing the phone lines from my doctor's office opened the next morning to call them and say, I got to get in right now. I was a hypochondriac. There's no other way to put it. And no one had ever mentioned anxiety to me before. And I'm still now discovering it. And I'm wondering if you hear me talk about how I'm hypomanic with my bipolar 2. And I like to think it's my creative energy that flows and it's a creative adrenaline and I have lots of ideas and I'm feeling magnetic around when I'm around people who are like me and creative and thoughtful and intellectual and they fire those synapses in me. Maybe the anxiety that I have long dealt with was also part of that mania. Maybe that was just another way my mania manifested itself through my hypochondria. I was blowing through my deductible and using my insurance. And it was a lot of it was in my head. And nobody ever said, I think you're dealing with an anxiety problem. One doctor said, you're a little high strung. How about if I give you a Valium and just kind of chill out? On the Cymbalta, it went away. My anxiety that I have right now is nominal. And I would say if there is a baseline normal, it's right there. For instance, in the past, you know, we've all gotten emails from work or the dreaded, I need to talk to you from whoever. And in my mind, and if you've dealt with any kind of anxiety, you know what you think when you get, I need to talk to you. It's you're breaking up with me. Someone died. Something abominable has happened. And in reality, it's really just, hey, I need to reschedule what we were doing on Saturday. Can we bump up 1 to 1:30? Or, you know, can we make it? Can we do Saturday afternoon instead of Sunday? And it's that. But you would think the worst. My anxiety would have the needle pinned in the red. But on the Cymbalta, I don't feel that anymore. When I get the, I need to talk to you, I'm like, okay, cool. You know, anything you want me to think about? I don't immediately go to the dread that used to come over me. So the Cymbalta works on something in my brain and in my body that I wasn't even looking for it to work for. I didn't even know that I was dealing with. And that medication is the only difference. This has nothing to do with me not being stressed over the last year, because I noticed this anxiety and these situations where my mind would be taken over with fear and terror and dread and hypochondria. When I got on the Cymbalta around 2015, and I'll never forget it because I got on it simultaneous to dealing with my mom's passing. I was at the CVS back home in Philadelphia trying to get the prescription right. So I'll never forget it. 2015. My mom has been gone now almost 3 years. And that was the moment and the time where this anxiety that I dealt with went away. So back to this book, Johann Hari, Lost Connections. I am a great believer in the environment being an immense cause of what's going on in your mind, good and bad. And if you're thinking about it, it's probably bad. If you're still with this podcast, it's probably something bad. And thank you again for being here. I'm sorry my monologuing and talking to myself isn't even more compelling. And maybe I'm just stressing out and being too hard on myself. Sometimes I listen back to these podcasts, whether it's just myself or with others. I'm like, okay, I got to clean this up right here and right there. But overall, it's a solid B, maybe even a B+. So I encourage you to read this book. I am not going to tell you to stop taking your medication because above all this stuff, things I've learned, I've added into, you know, my commandments of mental health. And this book even says, quit thinking about mental health that way. Wait, let me pull this up. I think I've set it aside. If you believe, nope, this was something else. One of the quotes in the book says, when we say mental health, we conjure pictures up of the brain. And it's so, so much more than that. Another takeaway from this book that I like a lot. If you believe that your depression is solely due solely to a broken brain, you don't have to think about your life or about what anyone might have done to you. The belief that it all comes down to biology protects you in a way for a while. Hey, it's in my brain. I'll just take these medications and it'll be okay. And a lot of people think like that. Thankfully, I don't, and I don't ever say that just take the medication, it will be okay. Take some medication if you believe that's the right route. Look, if you want some simple advice, go seek out some therapy. Maybe you need some medication. In addition to that, manage the medication, but continue with the therapy. Something I just texted to somebody that reached out to me on Messenger. We all need three good things in life. You need a good lawyer. You need access to these. When you can call, put in your bat ballot. Good lawyer, good therapist, good graphic designer. In 2018, we all need those. But I encourage you to seek out this book. If you want a taste of it, I can share the link out with you. I will retweet it right now. But again, Johann Hari, Lost Connections. It's not just serotonin or dopamine or a brain thing. It's greatly involved with the environment. And I was in a very stressful one, and I considered suicide way too many times for my liking due to my environment. And while I disagree, even with, I believe that there is good, hard, tangible science in this. And if you want to be even more cynical than me and pick it apart and go, yeah, but I don't really like the World Health Organization. Who influences them? Like, where's their money coming from? They have to say these things. Even if you want to pick apart all the data, good, do it. You can go down those routes. You can look at the footnotes and the subtext. I'll take it at face value, and maybe that's my naivety. But I will say that maybe this will rethink your approach to medication and at least how you use it in your life. I have, and I'll update you on this, where I'm at with... I'm not going completely off the medication. I would just like to get my libido back up, but I will stay on it simply to keep the anxiety at bay. But I am now more cognizant of that it is not an absolute necessity, but it's on a case-by-case basis. And be acutely aware of your environment. And a final thought as we wrap up here, and thanks for hanging in there, something that I took from the book that I reworded a little bit, and I'll share with you, and I'll maybe put it out there. I have this little note in my notes app that says philosophy and things I'd like to share out occasionally. Before you go altering your brain chemistry, alter your environmental chemistry.
This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content, which we highly encourage you to #subscribe and share. can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.